Coming up on Tech News Today, Facebook fights back against Yahoo in the patent wars, RIM's plan for success, and flying freaking cars. All that and more coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, April 3rd, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to Squarespace.com and use offer code TNT4. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
I'm Jason Howell.
And joining us today, we're very happy to have back on the show the Prime Minister of the Tech Republic, or editor-in-chief, anyway. Jason Hyder, welcome back to the show.
Always good to be here, guys.
Always good to have you, man. We got some cool stuff to talk about today, starting with a little bit of a return punch from Facebook against Yahoo in the patent wars.
Explosive.
So, Facebook filed its answer to the Yahoo patent suit, and it's a countersuit.
Yeah, first they denied all the claims, and they said they didn't have enough information to say whether they infringed or not, because that's a smart thing you do in a filing.
I did not have infringement with those patents.
That's exactly what it says. You're quoting right from the filing. But the real thing is Facebook says it's got 10 patents that Yahoo is infringing on. And you can go through all the patents if you want to, if you can say if they're valid or not. Knock yourself out with that. But the real thing is Facebook's effectively saying that a ton of Yahoo properties, including its homepage, Yahoo Sports, Flickr, shopping, news, anything you could think of that has the Yahoo branding, almost anything, is infringing on something that Facebook has a patent on, including a lot of advertising. And for advertising, for Yahoo, advertising is kind of really important.
That's pretty much all they make money on.
It's only 80% of their revenue.
So Facebook is claiming that 80% of Yahoo's revenue is derived from violating Facebook patents?
Potentially, yes.
Weird.
And so immediately this is going to be, well, Facebook and Yahoo will probably come to some kind of agreement. But Yahoo's response was in a statement, quote, "We've only just received Facebook's answer and counterclaims, but on their face, we believe they are without merit and nothing more than a cynical attempt to distract from the weaknesses of its defense."
Is that exactly what Facebook said the day Yahoo sent
I think they said they would fight vigorously
okay.
or something. It's boilerplate. We're going to fight tooth and nail until somebody's without tooth and nail.
So everybody was shocked that Yahoo had gone after Facebook. I don't think we're too shocked to see Facebook fight back. Jason, what do you think the chances are that this balances the books and forces some kind of settlement?
I don't know. I mean, most of this patent stuff, I tend to filter out a lot of it. A lot of it's noise because this stuff goes on all the time, right? It's big companies sort of playing ping pong with each other, trying to keep them off each other's turf, right? The only time that patent suits like this really matter is when somebody's outmatched, right? Somebody with a lot of patents is picking on somebody with not a lot of patents. So like Apple against HTC, right? And they ended up getting some judgments against them and it disrupted their business. Most of the time, sort of no business ends up getting disrupted. Maybe some money exchanges hands in a settlement behind the scenes, but pretty rarely, and usually it's not a whole lot. This is a case where there might be, Facebook might be overmatched here. Facebook does not have a ton of patents. Yahoo's obviously been in the business for a long time. They've filed lots of patents. They own lots of patents. And so this could be a case where Facebook is pretty outmatched and they're going to have to do something. I don't think Yahoo would have wasted its time or effort going after Facebook if in this case, because they have so many other problems to deal with, unless they really thought they could weak at them or get some money out of them or, you know, end up with something that could help them build some momentum again. I mean, they have nothing going on that sort of gets them in the news, gets them positive buzz, gets them attention right now. They still have lots of traffic. They're still doing some good things, but nothing that is really shaping the internet the way they used to. So I think this is legitimate. I think Facebook's the one in trouble.
Yeah, I was actually surprised to see Facebook fight back. I think that's interesting. I expected this to get settled. rather than than there to be a countersuit. But if Facebook thinks they can fight back a little, it makes sense for them to try in order to eventually come to a settlement that is a little more in their favor.
Remember, HTC did too, right? With Apple, HTC talked a big game. They talked. They filed this big countersuit, made it sound like they had all of this great intellectual property that they could fight back. In the end, they really had nothing. I mean, and they just got obliterated in court. And this is one of those cases where I think Facebook is just pretty badly overmatched from what I've seen, unless they have other patents that, I haven't been able to, that I haven't seen or haven't come to light or whatever, but they just look badly overmatched here.
I mean, Yahoo successfully did something very similar to Google when it IPO'd back, I think it's 2004. Thing is, taking on Facebook now, it's not like Google then, where they were just kind of coming up, and they were the standard, but Facebook is like a monster already before the IPO. So they have a pretty good legal team. So if this thing's probably going to settle out differently than Yahoo expected, I'd imagine, because if they're saying most of your revenue is ours, there's going to be a nice long discussion.
Yeah, I feel like even though, Jason, I agree with you that obviously when you look at the amount of patents and the extent of time that Yahoo's been in this game, they've definitely got the edge. But Facebook is, they're the bullish company. They got a lot of money. They got smart lawyers. I don't think they'd be doing this for no reason, just to bluff.
And they probably have all those.
They're just trying to lessen the blow. Yeah. I mean, part of it is just trying to lessen the blow, right? They know they're in trouble. They're just posturing the best they can to so that they're not going to lose. They're going to lose tens of millions instead of hundreds of millions or whatever.
In the other theaters of the patent wars over in Europe, Motorola, subject of a patent abuse investigation after Apple and Microsoft joined forces to complain. Both Apple and Microsoft say Motorola is suing over essential patents instead of negotiating a license deal under FRAND principles. Remember, FRAND means that you have to license certain patents that are essential to a device under a reasonable term. Motorola often accused of not being reasonable in the terms they offer for these things. Also, RIM, the subject of a patent suit from NXP Semiconductor, suing RIM over 6 patents that would affect the BlackBerry Torch, the Playbook, the Curve, and the Bold. But RIM is not worried about that. RIM is excited because they're launching BlackBerry Mobile Fusion today, a new enterprise management tool. We've mentioned it a couple times on the show that will allow you to support not only Playbook tablets, not only BlackBerry devices, but also Android and iOS tablets and smartphones through the universal device service. So you can configure devices with email, calendar access, create groups, establish security policies, detect rooting and jailbreaking, even control roaming. To help curb any fees that the company may incur. And it doesn't matter if it's a BlackBerry device, Android device, or an iOS device. So this is RIM branching out. They haven't set a rate card for this, but they're offering the service for free 60-day trials if you want to dip your toes into it. And at the same time, they're also trying to tout their developer community, because that's the big knock on especially the Playbook, is that there's not enough good apps. They say in Q4, they had a 21% increase in new BlackBerry smartphone apps, a 240% increase in the number of apps created for the Playbook. Now, if you're coming from a very low number, it's easy to get a very big percentage increase. Yeah, so
we've gone from 10 to 25.
70,000 smartphone apps in its App World Store, 15,000 apps made for the tablet. Those are very low numbers compared to Android and iOS.
I think this BlackBerry Mobile Fusion makes a lot of sense, though. I mean, we keep hearing stories over and over. People in the enterprise prefer iPads, and they want the Apple products that everybody else has.
But people say, I love the RIM security and management. So
exactly.
It's kind of the best of both worlds.
And to this day, and we make fun of RIM, in jest, but it's easy to do that. But nobody ever says, well, RIM isn't, well, besides some insecurity that we can point to over the last 12 months, as a whole, over a historical period of time, RIM is very good with security. That's why people stuck with the products that RIM offered, especially in the enterprise. So if they can add a layer of security to the devices that people are going to use anyway, that makes a lot of sense to me. It seems like the right direction for RIM to be going in.
Jason, what do you think of the Mobile Fusion service?
Yeah, this is smart, but where was it in 2008, right? In 2008 is when the iPhone went to Microsoft Exchange Active Sync, right? And so that's what enterprises have been using to connect their, to get all of their mail securely and to have remote wipe on devices and do all of the enterprise management stuff that RIM does. RIM has a better product. I mean, I think almost hands down has a better product, but it's a lot more expensive. It's a lot less flexible. And then it also wasn't quite as It just wasn't as available. It wasn't available for these devices in 2008. So if they did this in 2008, I think, and they, you know, made it, priced it right and did some of the things that they're doing, I don't think we would be talking about RIM as being on the ropes as much of it as they are. I think we'd be talking about them transitioning into more of a kind of background player, you know, an IBM of mobile kind of deal. But I just fear this is too late. You know, it really only matters to the most high security environments at this point, because everybody else is already using Exchange Active Sync for their iPads and Android devices. Or if they wanted to do something more secure, there's this thing that Motorola owns called Good Technology that's basically, you know, they do this BlackBerry sort of Bez thing, which is what this is, except for everybody. They do it for any devices. So a lot of them already, a lot of the most high security environments are already using that. And so there's no reason to go to this. At this point, it's a solution that's just sort of too late to market, unless you're already like a government and you're using BlackBerry devices and you're ready to transition to iPhone and Android, and you don't want to sort of replace your back-end stuff. This really only matters to them, in my mind. I don't think they're going to win a whole lot of new business with this.
Well, now you're putting a damper on the BlackBerry Jam in Orlando next month.
Right.
And that's the last we'll say about this. But they are going to be giving out thousands of test devices to developers, which they do at this developer event every year. Meanwhile, the app store that's getting the most attention is not from RIM. It's not even from Google or Apple. It's from Amazon.
Yeah, Bloomberg's reporting that Amazon's working on in-app purchases for its Amazon App Store app, which I was surprised that it didn't have it at all. Apparently, it's going to allow both subscriptions and purchases of individual items within the applications. And Bloomberg isn't citing some anonymous, you know, people familiar with the matter. This is actually Maria Lai, a co-founder of an app that sells fitness programs. So the app's part of Amazon's pilot program. It's been going on for about a month. Amazon didn't officially comment, but Lai did tell Bloomberg that Amazon would charge 30% commission, like it does for app sales. And Lai did focus a bit on the Kindle Fire, although the Amazon App Store does work on lots of different products.
Makes perfect sense to me. Started yesterday.
I was surprised to hear that Amazon didn't have in-app payments. Jason, this is something that Android users have known for a while, but has it really like affected things?
I mean, for me personally, it hasn't, just because I don't really use the Amazon App Store for a lot of app purchases. But I think it's worth noting the Flurry report that came out that basically found the Amazon App Store generates, what they said, 3 times more revenue than Google Play. Also found that top-ranked apps generate the majority of the revenue from in-app purchases. So, I mean, you kind of take it to that extent.
So the apps were doing in-app purchases. Amazon just wasn't taking a cut of it. That's all.
The report was looking just at the top-ranking apps in general, not just the Amazon App Store. Just in general, in-app purchases tend to make more money than just the purchases of the apps themselves.
But you're also saying that the Amazon App Store generates 3 times more revenue than Google Play without purchases.
Yes, exactly. So they can only stand to go even further at that point. It's kind of crazy that they haven't had this up until now.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. If you are thinking about, you know, I need to get serious about my website. I need to make a good business website, or my blog's really starting to get some traction. I'm worried about the reliability. I want something that's going to be stable as my traffic grows. Check out Squarespace. It's got an easy-to-use UI for creating and managing your website. It gives you some great analytics, great traffic numbers, and it's so easy to go start a Squarespace blog right now. You don't have to have a credit card. You don't have to have anything but a name. You just go to squarespace.com, you type in the name of the blog, and you're up and running. Use one of their design templates. There are hundreds to choose from. There's going to be one in there that's right for you. And then you can start, if you want to start tweaking away at the HTML or the CSS, you can do that. Or even if you just want to learn that, they've got these new webinars that allow you to actually take classes and learn how to get the most out of your Squarespace site or blog. 16 all-inclusive services, several modules to build your website, and online resources and support to give you personal help 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There's really no better way to get your website going. Why not go try it out right now? Absolutely free. Squarespace.com. Like I said, no credit card needed. They believe in data portability, so you can take the data with you. They also have a great importing tool that allow you to pull in your posts if you have a current blog with somebody else. Try it up. If you like it, keep it. No, and all you need to do is use the offer code TNT4, and you'll get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. That's 10% off the first month, or if you pay for a year at once, you get 10% off for the entire year. So check it out. Don't forget that offer code, TNT4, squarespace.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. I use them for forecast.
They also just rolled out new pricing too. Sorry, Tom, but they rolled out new pricing, which is pretty cool. I mean, it's I think it's $16 a month if you pay for a year and you get unlimited bandwidth and unlimited storage. It's pretty strong.
Yeah, a lot more flexibility.
Yeah, I've been using it for a couple of years for my site and just really impressed with it.
Now, one thing no blog can do is lower your energy usage. And that's something Niaz needs, apparently, because Facebook has this new social energy app today.
Well, it's from
and we found out that essentially all the climate change and fuel problems in the world are caused by IS.
Yeah, that's right. We can actually take a look at this. We've actually covered Opower before. Take a look at my screen here. You can go to social.opower.com and hook it up with your Facebook account. But so the top 20% of U.S. homes, and you're seeing this if you're not seeing this in the audio, top 20% of the U.S. homes only use 283 kilowatts per hour. I'm using 597 kilowatts per hour in my house.
Is that your house?
In my house.
Oh, wow.
And average
see that
wise,
hole in the ozone?
That's all my house. But average-wise, by the way, I'm beating the average of who are consuming 774 kilowatts per hour. And it's that gamification.
You're not the worst.
No, I'm not the worst. Right. Hardly the worst.
You look like a very average kind of, person.
What I need right to do that. Is I need to sign up my friends with this so I can compete. Because, of course, this is about gamifying your energy efficiency, right? So there's all kinds of tabs up top. They have those tips like Mint has. Ways to save. Hang your laundry to dry. Why didn't I think of that?
I do that.
I don't do that yet. Maybe I will. Choose an efficient freezer. I mean, these little tips that, you know, actually will add up in the long run. And in part of this whole gamification thing, if you go over to Pages, this is Pacific Gas and Electric, they actually will set up a little challenge for you. I guess you could win this little pixelated trophy here if I use 3% less energy. And, you know, I love little badges because that's what I do all day. Foursquare.
You know,
this kind
you
of
make
thing.
Fun.
No, I'm not kidding about Foursquare. I actually do like getting the badges.
Exactly.
And I don't know if I would change my electric habits so much as like now I'm much more aware because seeing this stuff, you know, I see the comparison charts, seeing this stuff up against everybody else, it's kind of nice to see. Turns out against similar homes, I'm using way too much. I'm using 60 extra kilowatt hours. So this is out there right now. It works with 16 different partners. If your electric company doesn't work with this, you'll have to manually type in stuff. But just go out and try it. It's free.
I mean, it's good for just to get a little bit better sense of where you fall in the using energy chain. Although you and I were talking yesterday about like something like the fuel ban is kind of fun because if we're playing against each other, then we both might be incentivized to run around the block a couple more times before the day is over. What happens when I see that you have used a lot less power than me for the day? It's like, shut down the lights. Turn off the movie.
Or you just go
we
over somebody else's house.
We can't use power anymore because we don't want to go over IS too
much. It could make people more social. You're coming over to other people's houses. You're like, oh, my electricity is too high.
It's like carpooling.
Right.
Movie carpooling.
Yeah,
it's
you make sure to go over to Ayaz's house to watch TV.
Yeah,
so you're using his electricity.
You game it to make sure you're like, yeah.
And then you go like turn on all his lights.
And then every once in a while, I buy him a pizza.
Yeah.
Somebody in the chat room is registering movie carpooling.com right now.
Movie carpooling. Now, how does it work, though? Because, Jason, you guys have winter where you're at there.
We do.
So we're just going to kick your ass all through January. And then your air conditioning is going to be, you know.
Well, then we kind of kick their ass all through summer.
Yeah. Because we have the bay. So that's not, you got to have some kind of like handicap for different areas because it's not his fault.
Or it'll make people
move. He's just trying to be comfortable.
Yeah.
It's honestly colder in San Francisco in August than it is here in December.
But. I know, you'll win in August over us.
Right. The snowstorms of August. Woo, they are brutal. They are bad.
All right. Let's move on to flying cars because it's about darn time.
I'll say. So there's a prototype flying car it's not ready for prime time yet, but it's as close as we have gotten so far. It's from a company called Terra Fugia. They're based out of Massachusetts. The car itself is called the Transition. It has completed its first flight. In fact, last month it flew at 1,400 feet for 8 minutes. Now, that's not a very long time, and that's a lot lower than a commercial jet, which is usually more between 30 and 35,000 feet. But, hey, 8 minutes, suspended flight. This is a two-seater. It's got four wheels. It also has foldable wings so that when it's not in the air, it can actually drive on the highway like a regular old car. although it has some limitations. Now, if you're driving on the freeway, let's say, and you get into a big traffic jam, you can't just sort of hover out of it the way that would be awesome for a flying car. You need actually a runway to get up enough speed. So there's that. It also does 70 miles per miles per hour on the road.
Maximum.
Exactly. So you might be like really shaking and feeling a little uncomfortable. I mean, 70 is like bare minimum. 115 in the air.
That's
so
why you get tickets.
Quite a bit faster. That's why I get tickets. It has a 23-gallon tank of automotive fuel. So 35 miles per gallon on the road, that's decent. Burns 5 gallons per hour, though, in the air.
So you're talking,
you can't be in the air that long.
You're not
going to
go in the air
gas
for more than 4 hours.
Exactly.
They're using as much energy as I has, you know, in a month.
Exactly. Now, 100 people so far have put down a $10,000 deposit on the model. And you might say, really, only 100 people are interested in this? But that's because the expected cost is $279,000. $1,000. It's not going to be cheap.
That's less than some Ferraris. I mean, I was looking at
How many Teslas is that? How many Tesla? That's like 3 Teslas. No, that's 2.5 Teslas.
Two and a half Teslas.
Depends on the model, yeah. I guess. Well, this is all. I guess there's the wow factor of having a flying car, but it's not really supposed to be anything that's super powerful or all that nice to look at. It
looks better as a plane than it does as a car.
Not a very good looking car at all. Uses special tires, special glass that are lighter than normal automotive ones to make it easier to fly. Obviously, weight is very important. This is all stuff that has to be approved by the government because it has to go through different, they have to prove, basically, the company has to prove that they should have different standards than just some regular old automotive vehicle.
I want to know who's allowed to use these cars.
Good question. So the Federal Aviation Administration are the folks who are going to say, all right, Tom, I think you're ready to take a ride in the transition. All you need is to pass a test that proves you're not a complete moron and complete 20 hours of flying time.
So I can be a partial moron.
Right.
And only 20 hours of flying time. That's not a lot.
That is quite a bit less than other private aircraft that other, you know, if you wanted to get your pilot's license tomorrow, you're going to need a lot more than 20 hours. And you know, some of it's supervised and some of it's solo. So this is, there's a little bit of the story is worrisome to me because you think, gee, just because somebody has the money to fly a car does not mean that they should. Bad drivers are even worse in the air. Now, Tara Fugia has been working on flying cars since back in 2006. And, they've really wanted to push out this prototype. The transition prototype is as close as they've gotten. They have pushed back the launch a couple times. As recently as last summer, they delayed some deliveries of parts. They cited design challenges, problems with suppliers. And then you also have the overall trend that, you know, people are getting fewer and fewer pilot's license lately. In the last few years, it's been a downtrend and people just taking the time and effort into going forth with a hobby like this because it's very expensive fuel and planes themselves. And these cars are, maybe they're not the price of a top model Ferrari, but they're still priced way out of the hands of most of us.
Jason, what do you think? Now you got the scoop on the Terra Fugia. Is this something that, I don't know, what do you think of flying cars?
Very exciting, but let me tell you the problem with it. Last week, I was in a cab on the Dan Ryan Expressway in Chicago, and I almost got killed by a person, by a young lady eating a bowl of oatmeal while she was going 75 miles an hour. And she was young enough that someday she's going to be in a flying car. And that's the problem with this. At 20 hours of flying time, that really worries me. Also, obviously, there's going to be, you know, some traffic. We're going to have to totally rethink the idea of traffic and going to have to, it's going to completely redesign sort of civic engineering and airports. And I mean, will we still need airports?
This is not the kind of thing that replaces airports. In fact, what it does is it causes parking lots to be have to be adapted so that you can take off and land from them, switch to the driving car, and then go drive on the highway. It's not the kind of thing where you can be, as Sarah mentioned, driving down the highway and just be like, oh, it's kind of backed up.
Right.
I'm just going to fly over everybody.
Wouldn't that be nice?
I can easily see.
Wait, helicopters. Can someone make
I was just thinking that. I was just thinking, you know, wouldn't it be better to have like a personal helicopter?
Yeah.
You know how many people cut themselves off in two dimensions, though? Can you imagine with helicopters? It's like, oh, I'm going to change lanes.
Yeah. Run into somebody. Who's got the right of way when you're both? Whoops. Yeah.
Considering the cost and the maintenance and everything else involved with this, I would see this would be great for like for taxi companies and things. Like they could become small airlines like Uber. Imagine if they had a fleet of these. Yeah. Like you don't necessarily need to have new parking lots for everybody. It's like this is too expensive for everyone just to have one. It's just going to be like, okay, the very few people have this. We'll rent it out. I'm just thinking this kind of like the whole like Virgin Galactic stuff. Very few people get to do this. But maybe this thing is puts it in within reach where if I want to go to Boston from New York, I'm like, I could just go in a cab company that has a small one of these planes instead of, okay, am I going to take the shuttle or this kind of thing?
That's a good call, like especially on the West Coast where we do not have the train system and the distances are far greater than, say, New York to Boston where you can, you know, buy a ticket on, I don't know if it's Amtrak out there, whatever, and get somewhere in a few hours. We don't really we have very limited options here. So it's like, well, do you want to fly? That sucks, but it'll get you there in a few hours' time. Or you can drive. That sucks, too. To have some type of a taxi service in between, that makes sense to me.
Or even like something like, I think this sets up perfectly for something like Zipcar, you know, like Zipplane. Like you don't, not everybody wants to own one of these, right? But there are times when you'd love to sort of rent one for a day or rent one for 3 hours to get down to LA from San Francisco, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, that sort of business model sets up perfectly for something like this.
Dr. T in the chat room, I think, nailed it. He said, this is not a flying car. Note, this is a plane that drives. Because that's what the Terra Fugia is.
It's a not, mini it's plane not, that
it's
drives.
Not a car
that's true.
You know, it's more plane than car, and I think that's interesting and that's cool, but it's not exactly I think what everybody has in mind when they think.
I think that's
splitting hairs.
Yeah, flying car, driving plane.
Now, flying car is a car that you can just take off and fly anytime. This thing's like a plane, and if you look at it, it's not very practical as a car because it's got the wings all. Hang on.
You're not going to drive this to work every day and then fly once a month.
Flying cars.
Let's get
closer than ever.
Let's get to the important story of the day. Instagram has finally arrived on Android as teased at South by Southwest. It has the same filters except for tilt shift. Eileen said that tilt shift doesn't appear to be in the Android app.
Yeah, their tilt shift isn't that good anyway.
Looks like otherwise it's pretty much the same as it is across iOS. And so now all the Android users are taking pictures and putting them in the Instagram feed. And Jason, you were saying there's a bunch of people on Twitter complaining about the riffraff coming into their fancy iOS land.
There was some BuzzFeed article that just had a compilation of a bunch of iOS users that are like, stay out of my Instagram, Android users, ew, as if it was like smelly socks or something. But
well, you know, they have to follow those people in order to see those people's pictures in their feed. So whose fault is that?
Yeah, that's true. Very good point.
Well, Android's only, 50% of the market. So it's like, well, let's put an app out there for everybody. The other half, I mean, that's a whole lot of people
but
that can get
it
there.
It is actually kind of interesting when you think about how popular Instagram has been, and it has only been in iOS. So any iOS users are very used to the probably large amount of followers they already have, and then suddenly in one day, boom, you know, their numbers double because suddenly there's a huge rush of Android users. It's been a very eagerly anticipated app.
I think there are a lot of Android users that I've talked to over the last year, you know, that Instagram has just risen as far as popularity has gone and their user numbers, who say, yeah, well, I don't really care anymore. I mean, I have other apps to do my camera stuff and my other communities, and we have other options, which is true. But I think there's something to be said about wanting to be part of a pretty big community that's extremely active. It's never going to feel like a ghost town.
Yeah.
Instagram is pretty well known for the most part, people wanting to take artsy, high quality photos, put a little effort into it, tell a little story. So, I mean, it's great to have all the Android people on board.
Yeah, I think it's a photo enthusiasts community.
Yeah.
You know, I think of Instagram that way. And it is a little bit, I think it's always been a little bit snobby, right? Instagram has. I mean, people want to take good photos, and they only really pay attention to good photos on there. So it doesn't surprise me at all that there are people on Instagram going, ooh, you know, that's a crappy photo. Because you sort of got, I never got that directly, but I always, people on Instagram only pay attention to really sort of interesting photos and really sort of creative ways to do stuff. And so it is cool in that way. I've sort of found that less and less I'm at on Instagram and using sort of Path more and more. And Path has been available for Android for a long time. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if Instagram continues its buzz and its run, even going over to Android. I think it's a big shot in the arm for them, but I'm kind of thinking that maybe they had to because they were losing some of their buzz on iPhone and they needed a little bit of an infusion of some new energy there.
I agree with you that I've lost a little bit. Not that I don't like Instagram. I don't want to say that, but I've got Path now and I'm posting more pictures to Facebook. So it's like,
same here.
I feel like the market is a little diluted, but their numbers don't reflect that at all. Their numbers are like crazy month to month.
It's funny. I used to use Instagram to hide how crappy the camera was on my iPod Touch. Because you can put a filter on there, like, yeah, you don't notice it's under a megapixel. That's awful. But it's colored different. It's
that's
got a filter.
Just the effect.
Yeah, it's the way it's supposed to look. And that's, I don't use it
that's
now.
That's my artistic choice.
Now that I have a good camera, I'm not doing that. It's like, I don't need a filter. I actually have a good picture now.
It's a good point. Actually, if tech early adopters are jumping off, that probably means that, you know, the masses are just getting around to, you know, really getting excited about it. So you're probably right about that, Sarah, that, you know, now it's becoming sort of more general purpose.
Right.
Or general
now
interest.
That it's mainstream, we're like,
I'm over it.
We're hipsters.
I've got Path.
We liked it totally. Before it was cool, when it was under a million.
Really quickly, before we get to the news fuse, Jason, this is actually in our lineup, and we didn't talk about it. Line 34, a bunch of people in the chat room pointing out the PAL 5-1 is a gyrocopter that does exactly what we were just talking about. It takes it converts quickly from road to runway and takes off like a helicopter. It's a helicopter.
Rock and roll.
Car.
That's what I want.
Yeah. So check that out. Forbes.com has an article up about it today. So there's a budget, and the Molar, you know, the Molar Air car has been out there for a long time. So we're not done with flying cars by any stretch. Let's move on to the news fuse. Tired of all that swearing in YouTube comments? Yeah, me too. Then Arizona House Bill 2549 is for us. An amendment to the bill would criminalize the use of obscene, lewd, or profane language through any digital communication if done with the intent to terrify, intimidate, threaten, harass, annoy, or offend. It aims to combat cyberbullying, but opponents fear it could chill free speech. Governor Jan Brewer has yet to sign the bill.
Now, what is up at the old rumor mill? It's another Apple rumor. TV Tokyo talked to a Foxconn factory worker who said the company will hire 18,000 people. Why? To handle the June release of the iPhone 5. The original interview was in Chinese, then it got translated to Japanese for the TV show, and then into English by a blog. So take that with a big, giant grain of Foxconn salt.
Tasty salt.
Whether you're Kim.com or just a former Mega Upload customer who wants his cat videos back, the MPAA opposes you. Mega Upload's lawyer, Ira Rothkin, said the company needs the servers to defend itself in court, but the MPAA opposes allowing former Mega Upload users to retrieve their data from the servers if that means pirated movies may be circulated again. Carpathia Housing, which has the servers, just wants someone else to pay for the upkeep or let them wipe the servers clean.
Looks like Australia doesn't understand Google AdWords, or at least one of their courts doesn't. The Australia Federal Court ruled that Google was misleading and deceptive when it displayed ads for a company called Car Sales in search results related to Honda Australia. Google was displaying the ads between March 2006 and July 2007. The court felt the Car Sales ads indicated a link between its operation and Honda Australia.
Sometimes you put things into wallets and sometimes you take them out. Google Wallets Day is actually a lot like a real wallet today. Co-founding engineer Rob Van Baron has left Google for rival mobile payment outfit Square, following former colleague Jonathan Wall, who left Google earlier. But Google's not crying because they needed room for the whole new company that they just bought called TXVIA, which has been working on a number of payment technologies, including prepaid and gift cards. They didn't need them anyway.
Google and Oracle have a week left before the deadline to settle their differences over Java-related patents, but the two just don't feel like cooperating. Magistrate Judge Paul S. Grewal issued a memo on Monday explaining the two have reached an impasse in their settlement discussions. The fun starts in San Francisco in front of U.S. District Judge William H. Alsup, who called this the World Series of IP cases. on April 16th.
Amazon's Instant Video app just got added to the Sony PS3. Both nice. Prime subscriptions for instant streaming and Amazon Video On Demand are now available. It should show up for users right below competitor Netflix under the Video Services tab. Xbox can play downloaded Amazon videos but has no app, so no instant streaming. And up until now, the Roku box was the only other major set-top box with Amazon support.
Mozilla's Brian Bondi, a member of the team tasked with bringing Firefox to Windows 8, the Metro look, posted recently that the browser is up and running. Yeah, it's similar to the Android version of Firefox, but already supports a few Metro-specific enhancements like the Metro Snap feature that allows you to snap another Metro app to Firefox so that you can view both side by side.
Metro PCS, not Metro, the Windows thing. Metro PCS is shifting its plans. Its unlimited, unthrottled LTE plan now costs $70. It used to cost $60, but that $60 plan now has a 5-gigabyte cap and is throttled to Slowsville, otherwise known as 3G speeds. After that, that's
Slowsville.
down to Slowsville.
As for the $70 plan, it's like unlimited voice, data, SMS, and still no throttling yet. Until they change their minds.
Let's fire up the randomizer! And out pops the Morphex robot, which we've actually seen before, but when we saw it before, it couldn't roll. Now creator Kari Halvorsen has released a video that shows the bot doing just that. According to The Verge, it not only can walk, but it can pull its legs in to turn into a sphere, and the individual sections of the robot can be pushed can be used to push it in any given direction. It's not perfect rolling, but it can just kind of like turn into a sphere, walk around, roll around, do whatever it wants. It's creepy.
Yeah, it's sort of spider-ish, but I still think it's really cool. Look at it roll.
It's definitely cool. Oh,
it's so cute.
You know, remember that Sphero thing you reviewed before you buy it? That's what it should do.
Yeah,
it should turn into
seriously.
A walking robot that can get you stuff. Because, I mean, I've seen robots that can jump 30 feet, but this thing looks like it could scare people without being like that DARPA
looks
dog.
Looks like something
thing.
Out of Portal.
Oh, it does, yeah.
It looks a little like the alien that came out of the guy's chest.
Are you?
It really there? Should shoot a laser out of that front
yeah.
area when it opens.
Where is the,
well, come on.
Where
I still
is the laser beam?
This could revolutionize halftime shows. You can see a bunch of these things running around, you know.
Seriously.
Backup dancers right
yeah,
there.
Yeah,
with a ton
money.
Of lasers attached to
exactly.
them. Yes, I love
and
it.
And they can billow smoke. So you can
cheerleaders, obsolete from this day forward.
Thanks to this robot.
Bring
Thank
out
you.
The rolling robots.
We're thinking big with this one.
The rolling robots.
Paint them pink. I love them.
All right, let's see what's on the calendar.
Oh, we got a lot on the calendar today. The Motorola Zoom Wi-Fi is now seeing Android 4.0.4 updates over the air. Nokia is holding a Lumia 900 launch party this Friday in New York City. Samsung has delayed the Galaxy Tab 2 tablets to the end of this month. Happy 21st birthday, Osborne 1. You were the first portable computer. For real. The real first real one. The Xbox 360 Kinect Star Wars arrives today. 4G LTE from AT&T is going to be available in Bloomington, Indiana on April 8th. Apple has set earnings news for April 24th. And finally, Sprint LG Viper 4G is going on pre-order April 12th for $100 with a release date of, we don't know yet.
Let's check what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Kevin called in. Jason, you guys at Tech Republic, I know, have been keeping a track of what Dell's been up to with their acquisitions, right?
Sure.
Check out what Kevin's theory is about what Dell is up to, not just with the acquisition of Weiss that we talked about, but some of the other stuff.
Hey, TT crew. This is Kevin from Medina, Ohio. I just listened to Monday's episode, and you mentioned that Dell had bought Weiss Technologies. A few episodes ago, you also mentioned they bought SonicWall. And as an IT consultant, these are all pieces of technology that I have given to my clients, or actually sold to my clients. And it's interesting how Dell is really moving into that one-stop shopping for your enterprise IT needs. You now have the firewall at the front end, you have network switches, you have workstation servers, and now you have thin clients for those remote access or virtual machines for those places that don't need full-out PCs. So it's just interesting how Dell is really molding itself as the enterprise IT option for just about everything. I wonder what will happen to the consumer side of things, though. Are they going to continue to push that? Because really, it seems to be lots of focus right now. Well, love your thoughts, and thanks a lot. Love the show. Bye.
And PC World reporting today, Dell bought Celerity. They do migration of legacy applications. So, Jason, what's up? Is Dell giving up on consumer?
Well, I mean, they've always had most of their strength in sales to businesses, small businesses, and enterprise as well. I mean, Dell's biggest thing has always been cheap, right? They sell stuff cheap, and so they always are looking for ways to be able to get out of the cheap cycle, you know, the commoditization cycle, because they don't compete well on the high end or in services with HP or IBM or even Lenovo. So, yeah, I think they're trying to sort of claw their way out of just being the cheap PC vendor for the masses. And a little bit consumer, you know, their brand is kind of tarnished both with consumers and with enterprise. I mean, one enterprise I knew that gave up on Dell laptops said they had a 47% failure rate with Dell laptops, you know, which means half of the Dell laptops they bought for their employees would end up failing and they had to replace them. So that's the kind of thing that has lost them a lot of confidence with enterprise. And I think it's also with consumers too. You know, they're not known for selling you stuff that lasts very well. And so they're trying to recreate themselves a little bit. I think there's no doubt about that. And that's what, so I agree with Kevin that, you know, they're trying to do some things that can, you know, get them out of sort of being this commodity hardware player whose primary, you know, marketing strategy is that we sell stuff cheaper than anybody else.
All right, let's finish up with an email from Jay in Ohio. We were discussing yesterday the number of computers using Windows XP recently increased. And Jay says, I wonder if the increase in Windows XP is because Windows 7 has an XP mode built in. I, for one, just upgraded from Vista to Windows 7 at work and run several XP virtual machines for very specific uses. If you were just to count my machine, you would see one new Windows 7 install and four new Windows XP installs. There are several machines in our building that do this. I don't know how they count the machines in those surveys, but it's possible that this could have an effect. I don't know.
This used to happen to Opera all the time, actually. As a user agent, it showed up as IE, and everyone was like, nobody uses Opera. It's like, yeah, they do. They so happen to be, they're showing up as IE. It's an interesting idea. I guess, again, depends on how they actually got the data.
Interesting thought, Jay. Thanks for the note. Mm-hmm. And thanks to everybody who submits in our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. That's the place to go to let us know what stories you would like us to cover in the show every day. Go and submit and vote and keep it looking good in there. We got over 5,000 people in there helping us out every day. We really appreciate it and appreciate the mods in there that keep it all clean and working well. And Jason Heiner, appreciate you joining us all the time.
Sure.
TechRepublic.com is the place to find your work. What's going on over there these days?
Yeah, so we're, you know, a lot of what we've been doing so far this year is we've really expanded some of our international coverage. You know, so much of what happens in tech now doesn't just happen in Silicon Valley, doesn't just happen in the United States. And so we have a lot of great international coverage coming out of London, coming out of Singapore, coming out of Sydney, Australia. We have some great contributors working in all of those areas, you know, following stuff that's happening there. In some cases, devices are landing in those places in Europe or Asia first. And so we're getting a look at them from, you know, the people that we have on the ground in those areas. And you know, that's exciting stuff. And the great thing is we also just learn a lot from each other about the ways that we sort of look at the world, right? And the ways that people that are making stuff in those areas look at the world and manage them stuff and, you know, buy, consumers that buy stuff. So that's some of the most exciting stuff that's happening for us right now.
Cool. Thanks, Jason. And thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, TNT@twit.tv, and you can give us a call. Leave us a voice message, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back again tomorrow with a whole new slate of tech news. See you then.